Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Billboard Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, Keith. How are you?
I'm all right. Anything happened in the past week?
Nothing. No, I definitely have not been watching the news around the clock.
I suddenly am so incredibly well-versed in how Georgia elections run.
Right.
And why it's taking North Carolina and Alaska weeks to count their ballots.
Hey, so, we got to keep our eyes on Georgia. Everyone keep working there.
Yeah, Georgia on my mind.
as John Legend sang.
I was like, John Legend? You mean Ray Charles?
No, you saw that he tweeted.
Oh, okay.
He tweeted and was singing the song. Oh, yeah, everybody, I know that John Legend didn't originally sing that song.
She had no idea. Well, okay, so, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop and sometimes elections on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news about why Ariana Grande's debut at number one on the Billboard 200 Albums chart with Positions is such an amazing feat, aside from the fact that it's her fifth number one. There's even more beyond that. And how Gabby Barrett's I Hope completes a record-breaking climb to the top five on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, and how Bad Bunny and Jay Cortez's Daquiti debut straight into the top 10 on the Hot 100.
Plus, in light of Miley Cyrus's recent collaboration / mashup / remix with Stevie Nicks on Midnight Sky, we dive into a discussion on what other dynamic diva duos could pair up for a collaboration.
Who doesn't love a dynamic diva duo?
We just love alliteration. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, let's do the chart chat. First up on the Billboard 200 Albums chart, just 1 week after Ariana Grande's single Positions debuted at number one on the Hot 100, its parent album of the same name comes charging in atop the Billboard 200. And in doing so, Grande logs her fifth overall number one album, but she also lands her third number one in less than 2 years and 3 months' time. That's the fastest accumulation of three number one proper studio albums ever by a woman.
Whoa.
Ever. Period. Period. Well, let's talk about the units and numbers and equivalent album thingies real quick. Positions, which was effectively a semi-surprise album that had little advance promotion before it dropped, starts with 174,000 equivalent album units earned in the U.S. in the week ending November 5th, according to Nielsen Music MRC data.
Well, I would just like to say, because we already spoke about the single...
Katie has thoughts.
I've got thoughts. No, we already spoke about the song and the video for Positions, the song, I should say. But we didn't have a chance to talk about the album since we left you to an election week episode last week. But I just want to say, I feel like I love the package of Positions. It's such an R&B throwback album. It gives me total, you know, Mariah early 90s vibes. And this is not to compare Ariana and Mariah for like the 9 millionth time. Like Ari definitely does her own modern twist on it with her own little bit of, you know, kind of a hip hop spin to R&B. But it is just a great overall project. And I love that direction for Ari. So I feel like Positions, the song, was like this little taste, little intro, like, oh, you're going to get a little bit different sound from Ari, a little bit more subdued. And the whole vibe really delivered for me.
Yeah.
And obviously for the other many tens of thousands of people consuming it.
Yeah. She said when she reacted to the album being number one, didn't she say that it was her favorite album or something? I mean, I guess you always say your newest album is your favorite album. But
it really feels, it feels like a project she had fun making, you know. Mm-hmm. It feels like she probably made the music that she wants to listen to and hear, which that's a cool feeling.
I feel like I also read something about how She said something along the lines of how she wanted to be kind of free from the idea of being, you have to reinvent yourself for a new era. Oh, it's like it's the positions era or whatever. And she wanted to, I don't know where I saw this from. Maybe it was a Billboard story or maybe it was just her tweeting. I have no idea. But I thought it was interesting where she was saying, look, why can't I just put out like some new music, you know, and not have a whole lot of pressure on it to like do something, which I think she maybe probably really got jazzed by from Thank You Next, because yeah. Sweetener was a traditional album with a traditional rollout. And then Thank You Next came really fast for almost anyone's, comparison purposes for a pop star. And this one just sort of drops out of the sky. And I think it's interesting that I think maybe more pop stars now are kind of looking to the model of what hip hop already does and has been doing really well.
Well, what's crazy, too, with these three number ones all in a row like this is that, you know, we've seen rappers do that, but we haven't seen female pop stars release things in such quick succession.
Can you imagine Houston had released three albums like within 3 years back in the 80s?
Clive Davis would never. He wouldn't have it. But yeah, basically Ariana's kind of taken the reins and decided I'm going to do it this way. And it obviously has worked for her.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm guessing we're just going to keep getting more music at this pace from her, or at the pace that she wants. You know, maybe it'll be 4 years before the next album.
New album at Christmas.
And then 3 months after that, you know, whenever she feels like it.
I'm saying new Ariana at Christmas. You never know.
Oh, it could be.
Over on the Hot 100, while the song Positions slips from number one to number two in its second week and is replaced by a previous number one, 24K Golden's Mood, featuring Ian Dior, of course, friends of the pod, Grande's new single, 34 plus 35, debuts at number eight. I was kind of hoping it would debut at number three or number four or number 34. In fact, all 14 songs on the Positions album are on the Hot 100 this week. And with that, she now has a total of 66 entries on the Hot 100, which is the fourth most among women. Only Aretha Franklin with 73 and Taylor Swift and Nicki Minaj with 113 each have more among the ladies.
Wow.
Yeah. Lastly, in chart news, Gabby Barrett's I Hope, featuring Charla Puth, friend of the podcast, The Puth, rises 6 to 5 on the Hot 100 in its 45th week, wrapping the longest journey to the top five in the chart's history. Of course, the chart dates back to 1958. It beats the previous record held by Imagine Dragons' Radioactive, which took 42 weeks to reach the top five. Also in the top 10, Bad Bunny and Jay Cortez's Takiti charges in at number 9, with 22.2 million streams and 3.2 million in airplay audience and a whopping 5,000 sold in the tracking week. By the way, the tracking week for streams and sales is the tracking week ending November 5th, and the tracking week for airplay is the tracking week ending November 8th. Sunday, 8th, yes.
Yes.
And the song concurrently starts at number 1 on the Multimetric Hot Latin Songs chart. It's the first title ever to have entered the Hot 100 in the top 10 and launched atop the Hot 100 Latin Songs chart at the same time. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I have to go back to Gabby Barrett real quick because I love that song so much.
Sorry, I just barreled through all that chart news and gave you no breath. I should have been looking at you and you're like, hey, I've got a flag.
Hi. Hey, me, I like country music. Let's talk about it. No, I really love that song, but it has such a crazy trajectory because she put it out, I think, on Amazon Music or something first, like self-released before it was ever picked up by a major label. And so it's been just this insane journey for this song. And she's an American Idol alum as well. There's so many little weird details. And then Charlie Puth hopping on gave it the radio airplay, you know.
It took it from country to top 40.
And AC, yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, Gary Truss wrote a story about the longevity of the song and some of the other songs that have had kind of this trajectory. Like Lone Star's Amazed was one of them. There's another country song in there that I forget, but they all kind of had a common thread where they would sometimes be these country crossover hits that eventually, late in their life, eventually made it to top 40 radio.
Yeah.
But yeah, this song and Gabby's sort of climb to success has been extraordinary. And kind of side note, kind of makes me think, like, does she have now a chance for like Best New Artist at the Grammy Awards a nomination?
That would be incredible. And also wild. I mean, I mentioned the Idol fact, but like, this has to be the biggest American Idol success story in who knows how long.
Oh yeah.
You know, and everyone, like a top five Hot 100.
American Idol off. Yeah.
I mean, I actually would love to go back and see who the last Idol alum to get in the top five of the Hot 100 was, like, you know, as their first song or whatever after getting off the show, as opposed to like a Kelly Clarkson song or something. Right. Or Carrie Underwood.
Looking forward to your deep dive on that, Katie.
I'll be bothering Gary about that very soon. In the meantime, though, moving from Gabby to some other wonderful musical ladies. How was that transition?
Yeah, perfect segue. It's just smooth as silk.
I wrote that out for myself. It's so good. But we have to talk about this remix that came out last week. It's the brand new mashup of Miley Cyrus's Midnight Sky with Stevie Nicks' 1982 hit Edge of 17. So the pair of cross-generational divas unveiled this new song on Friday, and it just kind of came out of nowhere and immediately, just for me at least, hit all the right notes. Like, I was immediately obsessed. So we have to take a listen. Let's take a little taste of Midnight Sky Remix. I think they're calling it Edge of Midnight, right?
Edge of Midnight.
A little fun name, yes. Yeah. Okay, so I feel like the biggest thing that I first heard listening to this is how neither song had to really significantly change in order for them to be meshed together.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, no, I'm with you, where it seems like they were just, it was like a peanut butter and chocolate sort of thing, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there have been, you know, songs that have been really... you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not referential is not the right word, but songs that have really sounded like, you know, previous songs. Like, I'm thinking of, you know, Bruno Mars kind of really channeling
any number of old songs.
I was gonna say Sting for Lockdown of Heaven, like, for instance.
Blurred Lines referencing Got to Give It
Marvin
Up.
Marvin Gaye, yeah, you know. Exactly. But this one, it was not obvious to me until they put the two songs together, and then it was almost like they were two separate musical puzzle pieces that, while they're not identical, they just interlock perfectly. You know,
yeah,
it's wild. And I think you had the same feeling too, where like you didn't listen to Midnight Sky and think, oh, it's Stevie, it's Edge of 17, right?
No, I didn't. And I had seen some like news stories where the media was claiming that it was like sort of Miley's intentional kind of tribute to Stevie or something. And I'm like, I'm not hearing it, but okay. And then I saw some like mashups that people were doing, like homemade mashups of Steve, like Midnight Sky and Edge of 17 on YouTube, and I'm like, I'm not really hearing it. Maybe I don't know. But I liked Midnight Sky as it on its own. And the only thing, I think we even talked about it on the podcast while you were away. What I was struck by was kind of like the tone in her voice evoked kind of that 80s rock chick thing,
yes.
Like Joan Jett, Pat Benatar, like Stevie Nicks, because just the tone and the vibe of the song. I never thought she was trying to rip off anything or like kind of call back to anything.
Ooh, that's the word I was looking for. Evocative, not referential.
Okay, sure. I'm here to help.
Well, and also you mentioned the vocal. Obviously, their vocals are like both, you know, gravelly, both deep, you know, but they also are so distinct that on this song, even if Miley is doing her Stevie tribute, it's like, you know when Miley is singing and you know when Stevie is singing.
Okay, you may say that, but I've listened to this like 10 times because, okay, full disclosure.
It's great.
It's great, and I like Stevie Nicks a lot, and I love Edge of 17. It's a stone cold classic. But on the track, I mean, this is billed as a collaboration, and Stevie tweeted it saying how like much fun it was to work with Miley. So I hear Stevie singing the lyrics of Midnight Sky, and I hear Miley singing the lyrics of Edge of 17 over the old existing vocals of Stevie doing Edge of 17. So sometimes they just blend so well then I'm like, God, this is just like, do more stuff together. Like,
I know.
I want to see you perform together. This would be amazing.
The full album. I want it. But yes, that's
sure.
It's kind of like actually when you listen to Fleetwood Mac, when you hear like, what am I trying to think of now? Sweet Little Lies. When you hear Stevie doing backup to Christine or whatever, and it's so obviously Stevie, because right. Stevie doing backup is Stevie, and right. So you hear Miley kind of doing backup on this like Edge of 17 portions of the song, but you know it's Miley even though it's like the Stevie part. It's awesome, yeah. Is what we're all trying to say here.
Yeah.
And the other thing that it made me think of is just how easily Miley throughout her career has been able to navigate different genres and different generations, probably a tribute to her dad and her godmother, Dolly Parton. I should say her dad, Billy Ray Cyrus, just growing up in music to the point that she probably just knows all this music, you know, from it just being in her house time.
It's always seemed like Miley herself has been such like a fan and a student of music, where she appreciates kind of, what came before her.
Mm-hmm.
And loves music. I mean, she, remember when Miley did, of course I'm going to cite this. Remember when Miley did her Unplugged show and Madonna was the surprise guest and they did Don't Tell Me together?
Yes.
So Miley loves music. She loves old music. She loves new music. She's just a big consumer and fan of music. So it's really cool to see her probably in her mind geeking out and losing her shit, getting to like work with Stevie Nicks.
Totally. And you mentioned the Madonna team up, but she also, of course, covered her own godmother's Jolene. She also just did a recording of Blondie's Heart of Glass, I think in September. She teamed up with Billy Idol on Rebel Yell at one of those iHeart festivals.
We were there for that one.
Yeah, we were there for that.
That was so cool.
And it all makes sense. So we got to thinking, like, what else makes sense? Like, who else would be the right, perfect match that have yet to get together? And I feel like we should start off by saying that when we were putting this list of ideas together, I was like, you know who would be great together? Cher and Lady Gaga. And then I Googled them and realized, oh, they already tried this and it didn't work out, but like, let's try again. Can we try again? We should try again.
I think we should tell them they should do it again.
Yeah, so let's do that again.
We were looking through. So this isn't just like limit. I mean, this isn't like a Miley thing of like who else Miley should work with. It's like what other kind of perhaps cross diva divides. Something.
There you go.
Yeah. Intercontinental diva divides.
Yes.
It should work together. And I immediately thought of like, well, Beyonce, who could Beyonce work with? I'm like, Patti LaBelle, because, that's just... So, two classics from two different eras, and also their voices are amazing. Like, yes. Why wouldn't they want to do it? Try it.
Go.
I also,
this whole show is just going to be like, please take our ideas for free.
I also, of course, thought of Ariana and Madonna. Ariana loves Madonna. They're friends. So, like, why not do it? But I think that's almost in a way kind of expected, because Ariana loves Madonna. So like, of course, maybe they probably actually talked about it before. I never necessarily expected Miley and Stevie Nicks ever to work together, because that seems super left field. I mean, even though Stevie's having this moment right now with Dreams, I would have never immediately thought of that. That would have never come to mind immediately.
And yet it's so perfect once it happened.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Beyonce already, but we had also kind of thrown around Tina Turner with Beyonce.
Yeah, well, because Beyonce loves Tina Turner, and she tributed Tina Turner at the Kennedy Center Honors a number of years ago. And we should actually just say, like, they did sing together on the Grammy Awards that year when they did Proud Mary together. So let's get a formal, proper song recorded together.
Exactly.
That's what we mean. Like a new song.
Another one that I wrote down was Taylor Swift and Joni Mitchell, which I believe she was lined up to portray Joni Mitchell in a movie or something, or like was up for a role. Anyway, there was something linking those two together. There's probably more on the folklore side of things than, the Taylor's career before that, but especially the folklore side of things that I think would mesh quite well with those two.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor, when she was doing, almost on any tour that Taylor does, she brings out all of her inspirations and contemporaries to come and sing with her. So, you know, some people have had the great fortune of getting to see Taylor Swift perform with James Taylor live, you know.
Which is her literal namesake, by the way. Taylor Swift was named after James Taylor, in case you didn't know. But if you're listening, you probably already do.
but Joni Mitchell was never one of those people. That would be pretty great. That'd be amazing.
I would love it. And then I was also kind of thinking about Adele, and a couple people came to mind. The first thing that came to mind was Barbra Streisand, because I was just thinking, whose voice in the history of pop music matches Adele's power, emotion, you know, all of these things. And the first thing that came to mind was Barbra. And my God, the vocals would just be incredible.
Immediately that makes me think of like when Celine Dion and Barbra Streisand got together and did I Finally Found Someone.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was Tell Him. No. What was
Wait,
the name
well,
of it?
Now we got to Google it.
I Finally Found Someone was, I think, the Bryan Adams song that Barbra did from The Mirror Has Two Faces. But I think Celine and Barbra did Tell Him.
Yes, Tell Him. You're correct. Tell
okay.
Him.
Well, I saved myself. So, yeah.
But I love The Mirror Has Two Faces.
Who else? Let's rattle some of these off here.
All right. Also with Adele, I mentioned Shirley Bassey, because couldn't they immediately just do the next Bond song? Like, put them together.
Right.
Give them an orchestra, put them together, and print the Bond song. It's done.
Right. Just have them just sort of hum a few notes and let right. the Bond song.
It's it. That's it.
There you go. You also suggested Demi Lovato and Pat Benatar.
Yeah. Right?
Sure.
Do you like that one? I mean, for me, like, my favorite Demi is like when she is just belting out a really powerful song, and just thinking of Demi singing any of Pat's songs makes sense to me. Yeah. I feel like a lot of Demi songs have been far more pop, but I think that if she went the rock direction of Pat, it would make total sense. Or maybe even Heart and Demi, you know, just like super powerful, like rock vocals. I think she would kill it.
You also thought of a great one, Dua Lipa and Kylie Minogue. They're both kind of clearly from the same sort of lineage of kind of pure kind of pop, like princess of pop kind of vibes.
I wasn't sure if I would offend you with that choice, though, because like, didn't Kylie just put out new music, and like, she's still relevant and current, really. But I guess Stevie did, too.
So Stevie just put out a new album. Barbra Streisand, I'm sure, is working on new music.
This is true. But when they made, like, originally came out, they were of a different generation, but still obviously making music.
Kylie Minogue's career started in the 80s, for Pete's sakes.
Right.
So I think she's fair game, and I think that'll be fun.
One more I need to leave us on is Rihanna. I was like, who can really like stand up with Rihanna and Grace Jones? Right?
Yeah.
I just was thinking about just what an enigma Rihanna is, like, as a pop star. And I think that matches that, like, you know, wild Grace Jones energy. And I like it.
Yeah. That would, I'm just trying, like, what would that sound like?
I'm like, more thinking what it would look like. It would look awesome.
Can you imagine the video?
Oh, my God.
Gosh.
Just
that would be
two
like
stunning women. Like, it would be too much
just,
for
just
one.
Just strutting around, just looking at one another. Like,
the fashion.
All right. Well, that was exciting and fun. And we could keep talking about this. We'll do part two next week.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, now it's time for the chart stat of the week. Come on and sing it all. This week in 1983, Lionel Richie commanded everybody to sing and dance and lose themselves in wild romance as his single All Night Long, All Night, hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. The track topped the list dated November 12th, 1983, and spent 4 weeks atop the list. It was the first single from Richie's mega-successful Can't Slow Down album, which saw all five of its singles hit the top 10 on the Hot 100. All Night Long was followed by the number two hit, Running with the Night, the number one ballad, Hello, the number three hit, Stuck on You, and the number eight hit, Penny Lover. I'll just sing them all. Can't Slow Down, the album, hit number one on the Billboard 200, dated December 3rd, 1983, and spent 3 weeks in charge. The album was so huge, it spent the entirety of 1984 in the top 10 on the Billboard 200. Whoa. It wasn't just a commercial success either, as it also took home the 1985 Grammy Award for Album of the Year. It's Quiz Katie time.
Ah!
Katie, can you name any of the other four albums that Can't Slow Down beat to win Album of the Year?
Okay, we're talking 1984.
Yeah, so big albums in 1984.
Let's assume there's a Michael Jackson album involved.
That was the year before. That was Thriller. It won Album of the Year before.
Okay. Great.
So now you're stumped.
Madonna.
No.
Okay, how about...
Madonna didn't get her first Album of the Year nomination until Ray of Light.
No way.
Yep.
That's criminal.
I know.
I need help.
Why don't I just tell you?
Why don't you just tell me the answer?
I'll give you a hint. One of the divas we just named was nominated for Album of the Year that year.
Okay, Tina Turner.
Correct.
Yes.
Private Dancer.
Yes.
So Private Dancer nominated, lost to Can't Slow Down. You have three more. Let me just name them.
Yeah.
Cyndi Lauper's She's So Unusual.
Okay.
Of course, featuring the hit Girls Just Want to Have Fun, among many others. Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA.
Okay.
And Prince and the Revolution's Purple Rain.
Damn. What a year.
What a effing year for music.
Lionel, nice job.
Nice job, Lionel.
Getting over all of those other people.
No shade. He had a bunch of hits from this album, too.
It's great.
It was a number one album. But, I mean, I would like to ask Lionel that night. It's like, man, how do you feel? And maybe, knowing Lionel's sense of humor, he probably would have been like, is there a vote split? How did I get this? You know, because he can take a joke. All right. Anyway, so there you have it. This week in 1983, Lionel Richie hit number one with All Night Long, starting his long chart success with the album Can't Slow Down and its string of five top 10 Hot 100 singles. Okay, Katie, we have reached the end of our big show. What song should we go out on? Perhaps a collaboration, a favorite collab of the past?
Ooh.
I mean, I've got many diva collabs that I love.
I was going to say, it definitely should be a lady collab.
I was going to volunteer No More Tears, Enough is Enough by Donna Summer and Barbara Streisand, but you could probably think of something slightly more contemporary for the kids at home.
I liked that, though. No, I feel like why mess with greatness?
Perfect. We'll go out on that one. See you guys next time.
All right. Bye.